You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 2 of The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. Who'd have thought we'd have made it to a second show, but a second show we have. It's a great pleasure to welcome back. Dressed in baseball gear this week. There has to be a story behind it. What are you doing?
Yeah, I'll basically do anything for cash is essentially right. The motto behind this outfit. I've just featured on a Major League Baseball podcast. Are you interested in baseball? How much are you paying? I absolutely love baseball. No, they get different people on. You don't have to know too much about it. But Bill, 2015, do you remember we went to Denver? We actually watched the Denver Rockies at the baseball stadium. I didn't know until we were talking about it. And we actually went there and watched them and ate all the hot dogs, what you did. And apart from that, it was great.
Good. Good evening, Big Bill. How are you? Welcome to the good, the bad and the rugby. What's occurring?
Nothing. You just had some food.
Shock.
To jump on in. I don't think I went to that baseball. I didn't get the text. It was just like Big Dogs and Sam and Hass.
I don't think so. You were probably like, doing that all you can eat buffet of the Rippers, weren't you? you were in the buffet of the Rippers, Spearmint Rhino Rippers, with like, you know, Billy was like, what? They do boobs and chicken legs. I'll be there.
And all our intentions of being a family show have firmly gone out of the window in the opening 30 seconds. Big Bill, what's happening? So welcome to the good, the bad, and the rugby. It's an absolute honour to have you on. Where are you at the moment? Where is the flicker ticking? Are you good? Are you bad? Or are you rugby? Because sometimes it's fair to say you can do all three in an afternoon.
No, I'm good. I feel good. Had a good dinner as well. I don't know why I keep talking about my dinner, but it was nice. I enjoyed it.
Look in the mirror. Take your shirt off and look in the mirror. That'll answer any questions about that.
It's very nice to have you on. And I think it's fair to say we've got a fair amount to talk about. Since we last chatted pods, I think that show was famous for the pizza curry pizza sandwich that you enjoyed. So there was a lot of food in our first conversation as well. It's very quickly worth sort of marking the fact that this is show 2, and we've had an extraordinary amount of feedback from everyone who's got involved in the first hit out last week with Eddie Jones. Thank you very much indeed to everyone who's got in touch. Remarkably, we actually made it to the top of the pod charts, Hask, which is, you know, it's like a century for an opening batsman, that kind of thing. It's all downhill from here, but hell of a start to proceedings.
Yeah, unbelievable. Like, I think, you know, we've obviously got some pretty amazingly loyal fans. And part of the reason I wanted Billy to come on show 2 was that he was my favourite guest of... We had a load of amazing guests, but he was my favourite guest of our old show. You know, I thought he was incredible. He, you know, every time I see him, he always makes me smile. And I think for us to have gone top of the charts, not just like... You know, there's loads of people in rugby noises who put things up like, oh, the number one rugby podcast. It's a bit like going, oh, you know, my number one secondhand car, like nobody really cares because it's fishing in a small pond. But we actually went global. We went global with the trailer that we still got criticism for, which I haven't got over, as you can imagine. And then when we went global with the actual podcast. So I'm very excited about that. But it just shows you've got some amazing fans. And ultimately, without any of the fans, any of the followers of the good, the bad, the rugby, it'd just be you and me shouting at each other with the poor guest on the receiving end. So it's quite nice that we got some recognition. But as I said, Billy, for me, he's one of the great characters of rugby and someone that I've got like the utmost affection for, someone that I admired as a player. Never let him know that, because obviously when you're that senior, you don't want to let the small little people know how you're thinking. But, you know, he inspired me to play with better freedom. I mean, it probably didn't show it on the field, but I tried to have that. And I think it's great to have him on. And I think good to bad rugby is about personalities. We want to explore some new people, but I think Bill's honesty and his journey is something we want to champion. So I'm excited to see it. And thank you again for all the feedback.
Let's get into it. How's lockdown been? What have you done?
I heard what you said before, Hask, about me being a professional and all that. You talked to Eddie. I actually try to train a little bit, try and put my professional cap on. Did a bit of training throughout lockdown. Not that it was funny, but the group that I was training with, we got caught having a few coffees in town. That was actually good evidence that I was actually out training. I wasn't just, you know, down at the strip club, like Hask said.
Other places are available. It's not just the training ground or the strippers. Just to let you know, there are like all the various buffet. Other places.
Yeah.
No, but I think with the lockdown, I did struggle a bit not seeing the boys, like being in and around the lads. And
what training were you doing? Were you lifting big weights? Were you running in circles very quickly? Were you swimming, jogging,
just
Pilates?
A lot of running. Quite easy when you got just open fields. No weights. Not a big fan of weights, but sometimes I have to do it, obviously, because it's my job. But my biggest thing is trying to be fit.
Okay. Do you feel like you made some benefit? You know, I know we joke about stuff before about, you know, your size and everything like that. We've always used that as a weapon. And you know, I know you and I have talked about size-wise and stuff before, but, you made 20 carries a game sometimes and a large number of tackles. So do you feel like this extra fitness is going to make a massive difference? Did it help?
No, definitely. I think, obviously, last week was our first game back after 5 months. I had a big injury before we went into lockdown. So that kind of gave me a good recovery time. And then being in lockdown, it gave me a lot to think about how I could improve my game. And obviously watching the Super Rugby in New Zealand, these lads who are basically sevens players playing seven, six and eight, were kind of changing the game. So I'm trying to not miss the jump. And obviously I want to stay involved with the international team as well as Saris. But to do that, you've got to be ahead of the curve. And I think this new breed of rugby players, they're a bit different, but more along the lines of a Kieran Reid mould rather than myself.
Just tell me what it was like being back in your jockstrap and your boots again. Were you like a spring lamb in April, May? Did you feel free with the wind in your hair once again? Must have been amazing.
Oh, no, it was cool to get back to playing. What was strange was obviously all the protocols.
Yeah.
Not allowed to sit next to your teammates. Having no crowd there was actually stranger in real life than actually imagining it, because, you know, we don't get too many people come to Allianz Park, so we think we'd be used to it. But we still struggled a little bit down at Bristol. But other than that, it was, as soon as the ball kicked off, you just try and fly into anything that was moving that wasn't the same colour as your shirt.
And quick word on Randrandro, is that a huge amount of build-up? Special? Oh,
I think he'll be awesome. Obviously, the game on the weekend with the weather that we had, obviously didn't allow for him or for the game to be open and flowing, but he's dangerous. He looks in unbelievable nick. I tackled him and I felt like I was, you know, those old school washers that you used to wash your clothes with, the washboards. I felt like I was tackling one of those. So he's going to be class. I think Bristol will do well as well, but I think we're building slowly to the length of the game.
Just bringing you back, Bill, just without, it was not only negative. Was there any worries about your arms?
Yeah, I think I've done a lot of work on my defensive work recently. I think one thing I've been looking at is my tackle techers. What I was doing before was I was in a rush to make tackles and in a rush to make an impact. And I guess that was down to impatience. And I thought I did better on the weekend. And the more I play, the better I get.
It's very good to have you on. And it's very good to see you back doing what you do so well. We've got so much to get into. So we're going to talk to Billy about life in the Championship, faith, brotherly love. But before we get into it, I actually want to start with the headlines that came out last week. And I don't know whether you were sort of predicting them or whether you were surprised by it. I don't know. But the comments about the World Cup, I think it was a week or so ago, and you said you felt like you'd let England down, which was certainly quite a curious thing to read, because it was not something that as a journalist out there or a fan, I think anyone would have noticed. Why did you say that?
I think what people saw, obviously, on the pitch was different to what happened behind closed doors. Obviously, it's something that is, I guess, pretty close to my heart. But I felt that in the lead up to training camps and to the actual World Cup, felt like that I caused a bit of divide within the group just by some of my actions. Me personally, not just with the players, but as coaches as well. And like I said, when the headlines came out, I actually talked to the people that it affected. I obviously talked to Eddie and talked to players before, way before we went into lockdown. And after the World Cup, it makes you think. When you lose, it makes you think like what you could have done better, what you did do well. And for me, that was certainly something I could have done better, was the relationship within the group. I essentially affected a lot of them, and that's just how I saw it. But, you know, it's one of those things you move on from and learn from.
If you've put it to bed, are you happy to sort of elaborate on that?
It's tough for me to elaborate because it affects other people as well. And obviously it's something that I said when I did the media interview, that it was pretty close to my heart. And the one guy I would say I talked to is pretty obvious, was Eddie. You know, it's something that I felt that I did that affected the team, essentially.
Okay. We had Eddie on last week. I don't know if you saw it or not, but he actually had, I mean, we asked him about it. And I think he was understandably defensive about it. But for our viewers and listeners, we're just going to play in the clip. This is what Eddie said about it last week.
The great thing about Billy is that he's honest and everyone enjoys his honesty. And I think like everyone else, he's had a great time to reflect. And I think he's reflected on the period of the World Cup. And I don't think there's anyone at the World Cup that would suggest that Billy didn't give his best. You know, there wouldn't have been a player, staff member who didn't think Billy gave his best, and he did. But he's been reflective, and I think he understands, and I think all of us are feeling this, how much we've missed playing for England and how much gratitude we have to have the opportunity to play for England. And I think that's what he's saying. You know, he wants to go out and he wants to give his best for England going forward.
I'm interested to sort of to know how you feel you've sort of what you've learned from that experience.
I think the one thing I said in my interviews was that the biggest thing is getting ahead of myself. It's one thing I struggle with all the time. Oh, my agent will probably back me up on this, is I guess a bit of complacency in the things that I do, or if things go well for myself, I just feel unstoppable or feel invincible. Whereas it might rub off on other people in a good way, it might rub other people up the wrong way. And I think for myself, I realised that have way more influence than I think that I have. I still think that I'm the 21-year-old that turned up to training and forgot my boots and had to borrow Hask's for an international training session. That's where my head's at. But I'm not that guy anymore. My wife hammers me all the time because I forget that I'm 27 and not 21. And that's kind of where the origin of what I'm saying started from, was just being complacent with myself and also the influence that I had on the group. And like I said, it affected team dynamics in a negative way rather than a positive.
You are so wonderfully open. And I remember this from the last show as well. I think you were very open about sort of perhaps the partying and the going out, etc. I just wonder now, have you got a good network around you that you mentioned your wife and certainly Hask benefits from having a very strong presence on his shoulders. Have you got that network now, you think, that is actually helping you in these circumstances?
Yeah, I do. I definitely have a stronger network now, especially my wife back. But something that I'll always battle with, and the biggest thing is, like, I get myself into a place where I feel guilty if I go, like you said, partying. It's my weight, my faith, like all these things go on in my head, and I look at other people who are hungover, and I'm like, I wish I could just be hungover. But it's not hungover. I'm like, oh. Thing is, when I go out, it's not just go out for a few, like two or three drinks. It's go out and don't stop until 2 or 3 days' time. That's kind of where my problem starts creeping up on me from. And it's either like all in or all out. And that's something that I need to work on and something that I'm constantly battling against. But it's not a battle. It's just something that I put a lot of pressure on myself to try and be a good person. And sometimes it gets to me.
But I'm interested just because you are a good person. I think most successful people are racked with those demons. If you didn't have the voice that said after you've been on the piss or you have missed a training session or you've forgotten your boots that wasn't right and that wasn't professional, you wouldn't be as successful as you are. I never, for the long part of my career, you knew that, you know, even before you started drinking, I would hardly go out a lot of times because I'd be racked by guilt. I, you know, if I went out, I'd have to train the next day. You know, I was never satisfied. And I think it's interesting you say about your, when you get complacent, but sometimes that knife edge of feeling invincible is what makes you one of the best players in the world. And if you looked at doing some psychology stuff as well, I know you use faith as a tool, but speaking to psychologists and harnessing that, because it's a fine line between success and failure, that, and you don't want to eradicate the feeling of being, you know, invincible.
No, it's something that I certainly looked into when I was younger, whereas now I think for me what makes it easier is kind of putting it out there and talking about it, rather than whether it's the media or whether it's my wife or my parents. You know, I'm pretty open book, and like you said, you're right, it does make me, when I feel like that, it makes me a better player. The danger is just like carrying on basically, when I need to know where the line is in terms of where my head's at, in terms of, say for example, we won the double and here I am thinking I'm the man, which I wasn't, and then that influenced things off the field in the World Cup camp and other things that led to other players being affected negatively. And that's something that I shouldn't have done, and something that, like I said, I reflected on and talked to those people. And that's where I think it's not a good thing.
It's very interesting because we were talking last week with Eddie actually about The Last Dance, and he actually said that Rodman was Marla. But I just sort of wonder in many ways whether, you know, you are who you are, and more with a Saracen's hat on, really, how what Saris have done to enable you to maximise your potential, but to also keep you on track isn't necessarily the right expression, but to keep you within their framework. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, Saris is an environment where... Oh, it's similar to England. I feel just as comfortable at England. The only difference with England and Saris is there's other players from different clubs that aren't used to it. And that was my problem, was that I went in with the same feeling towards everyone else. And that's kind of what I wanted to do, was break down barriers with other players from other teams. And I wanted other players to have that vulnerability where we can then grow. And people were only willing to go a certain few steps, whereas I was ready to go all in. And that's kind of where it kind of started from, yeah.
I bet Mark McCall is over the moon that Vegas is on the other side of the world and not around the corner like Rodman had.
Do you worry, though, about your mental health in general? Like, are you in a good place with it? Because it seems to me like you're kind of tearing yourself apart on a few different angles. When I don't recognise you as that kind of disruptive bloke. I think, you know, if you're going to say anyone's disruptive, you would have said I was disruptive. And I don't think you could be best of friends as everyone, as long as your teammates respect you and you're respectful. Head on or not?
No, I'm sweet. I think I talk to my wife about this all the time. The thing with me is that I'm always trying to be better and I'm always trying to be perfect. And sometimes you can't be perfect. I know that. But I still strive for it, even though I know I'll never be perfect. And that's kind of what makes me the player that I am, but also the person that I am. And that's something that I guess I really like about myself. You know, I'm a bit like you, Hass. Like, I always need something going on outside of rugby. I want to, I don't know, invest in stocks or so I hammer myself with that. But it's not about my mental health, I feel like, is in a good place. Something that I don't really think about. And if I do worry about it, I just pray about it and I'm sweet.
Can I ask you about your rents? I'm absolutely fascinated by your dad, because I remember talking to, do you remember Lynn Jones, who coached the Ospreys? And I think they played together way back when. He said your old man was a proper player. We're sort of hashtag old school, as it was, I think, back in the day. But you mentioned your relationship with them a few times. Am I right in saying they tell you exactly how it is, when it is, and there ain't much comeback on that?
Yeah, that's basically how it goes, yeah.
Is that relationship sort of with the circumstances you're describing now, is that an easy relationship to have with them? Can you talk openly and transparently? And do they give the advice that you need? Or is it sorted out and come back to me when it's sorted?
Sometimes my parents can be too honest, but sometimes they know when to support me and when not to. The thing that I'd like talking to them about is I almost want them to reassure me, but I'm unsure. And they always would normally go the other way and be like, no, you're wrong. Whereas some people are too scared to tell me the truth, so they don't tell me. An example would be when I was younger and I felt like I played well because I scored 3 tries and my dad was like, mate, you're lazy. These coaches won't tell you the truth because you just won, but I'm telling you because the next step you won't make it. And I'm like, yeah, but I just scored 3 tries, Dad. And he's like, yeah, but you're still walking everywhere. You're lazy. And I'm like, all right, sweet. This guy's a hater. But then when I grow up, I realize that what my dad said is true, because the situation that he was in, he never wanted me and my brother in. So that's kind of an example of what our relationship is like. They always want the best for us, and sometimes what they say isn't what we want to hear, but it's what we need.
Do you ever remember watching your old man play?
Not really, vaguely, but I was too busy running around the grandstands and just messing around.
Got you. And how is everything with Macca at the moment? Because you're quite honest about that as well, which again, I'd absolutely no idea about. Has there been some brotherly love with Macco, and what's been key to generating that?
Well, I think what people obviously see on the pitch is that we play really well with each other. We vibe off each other quite well. But if you were to say that we have a strong relationship off the pitch, he's a very different person to myself. He's very quiet, very reserved. And he's usually the one in the corner. You know, if you have a best friend, they'll be laughing at all your jokes that aren't funny. He's the opposite. So if I say something that actually might be a little bit funny, he's the one at the back like, mate, shut up, will you? He's one of those guys.
He's your anchor.
A hater.
Yeah, he's a hater. But I think that probably boiled over into actual, like, genuine, there was a competitiveness between us where we drive each other. But I think he experienced a time in his career that he was injured. And I felt like I wasn't helping him as much as I could. And he knows it's true because, and this is how silly it is, I could not tell him what I felt like to his face. I had to tell the papers who then, he's read the papers and he knows. And through that is kind of how weird our communication channels are. And also our wives and girlfriends do a lot of the talking for each other, for us.
Is that down to your Tongan roots? Is that, because it seems like you're, you know, having gotten visited your amazing country and seen everything, do you feel like you're further, you're one step down, you're much more kind of, you're less Tongan than you are, but obviously you've got an amazing heritage, where Mako still, you come across as still having this real Tongan values, then you go a step to your family and that's further and further. Does that, what caused a bit of a divide? Because you've got some more kind of Western vibes and Mako's a bit more Tongan, if you know what I mean.
Would you say that?
Well, I genuinely would. This is my opinion, because everything you've said in this podcast today is, let's get one thing clear. I will always take the piss out of you. You're a top man. You're a good, you are a genuinely good person. Like, there's no way about that. I think sometimes you struggle to find a level, but everybody struggles to find a level, myself more than anybody else. And that doesn't make you a bad person. You're never ever in life going to be able to keep everyone happy. And I used to operate a policy of a 10-man table. If 9 lads were laughing, 1 lad was crying, that was a fucking good day in the office. That was a win, right? And you see that magnified in the world. I feel like you're torn apart, A1, by the religion thing, because that has a strict code and a certain way of living. Then you have your Tongan roots, which is hierarchy, respectful, humble, you know, your elders are important, you know, you graft, you work. But then you've got kind of the, almost the westernized version, which is, you know, I'm good at what I do, I want to go out, I want to live, I want to do these things. It feels like these three things sort of pull you apart, where Mako, yes, he is loose. We've all seen him on the smash when he goes mad. but he seems to be slightly more old school than you are. And it depends what time of day I catch you, because sometimes you'll be the Tonga guy, humble, stay crumble, bruv. Then next time I see you, you're absolute Champagne City. And then what's happened is, once you've been to Champagne City, you'll then go, oh, well, that's not in the Bible, so I need to go and do that. And it's like a roundabout, whereas there's no religion around this gaff and there's no Tonga ways. It's just straight madness. So is it pulling you apart, genuinely?
I think if you try and understand why me and Mako are different, the one thing people don't realise or understand is that you met my aunties, didn't you, Hask?
Yeah.
Very open and very loud. And so when we were younger, quite a deep story, but I'll tell you anyways, because hopefully it'll help the pod, but...
Thanks, brother. Sprinkle a bit of stardust on our shit pod. Cheers, cheers.
Salt Bay.
Yeah, thanks. That's very kind of you.
So when I was born, when I was younger, my parents could only afford to take one of us when they went away to uni. And you see my dad, Hask, he's like my brother, very quiet, until he has a drink. But that's the first time he's drank in like 10 years at the wedding. Very straight down the line, my dad. Stay strict, but that's just the way he is. Very quiet, very reserved. Hasn't got many jokes like my brother. So he's sometimes a bit of a hater. But anyway, so when my mum and dad had me, they had an option of going to, they had a scholarship that they could take up in New Zealand, in Wellington. And they could only afford to take one of us. So they left me with my grandma and my granddad and my aunties and my uncles. So I feel like, I know that's why my brother is very strict, because my parents have told me, my mum have told me that Mako was brought up in a household with them two where they were struggling to make ends meet in New Zealand, had a lot of people helping them out, had a lot of rugby players from the local clubs looking after Mako when they had lectures on and things like that. Whereas when I was at home, I was always surrounded by people that would never tell me off, never discipline me, would never think that I did anything wrong. So I was spoiled from when I was 0 years old until I was 7, and they say that from 1 to 7 is where you learn the most of your personality and obviously your diet and everything else like that. And that's kind of why me and my brother are so different, because I grew up in a house where, like, I literally just ran everything. My grandma never hit me. My granddad I remember I went to school once and I cried, and he was like, all right, I'll buy you a mince pie. just so I can go to school.
And well, you must have done a lot of crying. I saw you when you were a kid, you're 150 kgs.
You know. And that's why when I was growing up, I never had any boundaries. And that's why I'm so different to my brother, because I was allowed to just be myself and express myself, which is, I guess, kind of the dilemma that I have that my brother doesn't have. But coming back to what you're saying about my brother being more Tongan than me, I feel like that I have that connection with Tonga because I grew up there. And that's why it meant a lot to me to have my wedding there. And also because my grandma, you know, she's like my second mum. And that's something that I guess only my family knows. But it's a cool story to tell because people now can understand why me and my brother are so different.
Have you ever spoken to Macca about it?
No, I haven't.
We'll pass the message on, don't worry, through the papers as well.
Yeah, he'll listen to this and you'll probably come in one day and be like, mate, are you all right? What are you telling that for? And then I'll be like, all right, you liked it.
Did you think, though, that Pacific Islanders, because we had Dan Leo on, right, and he came and talked, obviously, like, you know, the rep for the Pacific Islanders, and you know, men are notoriously, myself included, and are terrible at expressing themselves and saying their feelings, like having hard conversations. You know, I think I like our relationship, Bill, and I like my relationship with Alex, because actually, if you ask me how I am, I'm not going to go, I'm fine. I'll tell you, I'm having a good day, I'm having a bad day, we share things, and you and I have, you know, you've asked me for advice and vice versa, Bill, I spoke to Alex and vice versa. I find that Pacific Islanders, it's even less likely for you guys to share your problems and communicate. Is that a real thing, or is it just you guys as brothers, or is it just not a done thing that you would speak to each other like that and say, maybe, do you know what, brother, I'm having a hard time, I need you, or vice versa?
I think if it was very serious, we then would talk about it. But, you know, all the little things that can build up to the big things, you kind of don't approach those, subjects until it becomes like a big deal. And that's just the way I think Tongans are from what I know. In Tonga, you're either sick or you're not. So if you have a cold, you're not sick until you're in hospital with pneumonia. So there's no in between, and that's similar to relationships. So I wouldn't talk to Mako about if I've had a bad day. He'll just turn around and be like, mate, you're all right. What are you wasting my time for? You know, until it's like a big deal where he knows he can help and have an effect, then he'll step in. And that's just the way it is.
Have you got someone, though, for that?
For
those little things?
Yeah, I talked... My best time is when we go to bed. I talk to my wife when all the lights are off and I feel like I'm talking to just a random person, but it's my wife.
That's quite a female trait in relationships. So, you know, Chloe, I would voice stuff in the day, you know, not all the time, but I will share things. I think getting stuff off your chest, even if it's a little thing, is right. Sometimes I'm very much more tough love than Chloe. Chloe's much more compassionate, understanding. I'm like, what you're whining about, just get the fuck up, you know. And obviously I've learned to kind of wind that back in, but it's interesting because it normally before we go to bed, if there's any drama, Chloe will speak just before you're about to go to sleep, and I'm like, ah, yeah, no, and then I'll fall asleep and I'll wake back up and I'll say yes, and she'll be like, yes, you want to leave me? No, that wasn't the right answer. So it's interesting because I can't do it at night because I want to. The problem with me is if my mind's busy before bed, I struggle to sleep. But I suppose you're getting everything off your chest, like addressing everything, then you sleep even better, is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's definitely it. And I think that's something I'd probably do to my wife. I'd tell her everything and then I fall asleep and she's there, like, trying to calculate everything. And then I'm like, morning, babe, how do you feel? She's like, yeah, I couldn't sleep.
Mate, it's crazy.
Different peas and different pods. Where are you at with Macca now? I mean, obviously, this will help, I hope, bring you closer together. But through the papers and through your respective good ladies, you know, has there been a bear hug and a I love you, bro? Is there been progress or are you still just...
Oh, no, we're sweet. We're sweet.
I'm glad to hear it.
It's helped the two that he's got little kids, his little boys, and it's so easy for me to have an excuse to go over there and check on my nephews and also just see how he is. And I think the way he sees the way I look after his kids and look out for them, he knows that there's genuine care for them, for him as well, through them.
It's amazing because I'm a little bit scared of Macca. I've always been a little bit scared of Macca.
Why are you scared of Macca?
But now Bill's explained it. It makes more sense, the different upbringing, because, yeah, you're shaped differently if you're in an intense environment and it's harder. But Macca is more serious. I do joke, like, I do make him smile and we have a really good relationship and I love him, but it's different than Billy. They are quite different. But then equally, both very professional and both, when they spoke within the England squad, you would listen. Doesn't matter whether you were a senior player or a young player. When Mako said something, you listen. When Billy said something, you listen. And that's what Billy means, I think, when he says he realised he had more power than he has. You know, sometimes it's like with me, when a member of staff used to come in and we used to like get into them and like take the piss or whatever, someone would take me to one side and said, you do know that a lot of people listen to what you say and, you know, you've got to be a bit more careful. And one day I realised, you know what, for all the jokes aside, I have an influential personality. I need to make sure that I'm, you know, respectful of that. But with Mako, it's because he's serious and quite scary. And like you said, you can see him sort of judging you a little bit, but actually he's got such a, like a warm heart under that exterior. And most of the time he's asleep, which doesn't help. It's like with Mako, you know what you're like when you get woken up from a nap? Mako's permanently between naps, so he's always fucked off. It's always like someone's woken him up. But when I saw what an amazing father he was with his lovely wife and a kid and how cute he was and what a good dad he was, you know, you then see that there's that softer side, but they are very different. And just Mako, you know, Mako's serious. I mean, I've seen him walk past and fucking slap Cruiser in the face. And like, you know, and when we play against, when we get to play against Ireland, I drive him all. I went through the middle and just got caught holding it. And Mako went, Haskell, you fucking pussy. I was like, Mako, what are you talking about? And he's like, next job. I was like, no, you don't get to call me a fucking pussy. And then next job, Pete. I tried to score twice. Like, it wasn't my fault. But then he was like, hey, just relax, Hass. Next job.
Next job.
I was like, Mako, that's like, you can't spit in my eye. Next job, me. I want to get Mako on because again, he is one of those real intriguing in characters. But I think just because he's senior as well, and I'm aware of how hierarchy works. And I've always been respectful of I mean, I'm older than him, but you know what I mean? Just, he has a certain bit of, Billy's just a little bit looser. Yeah.
Do you think Mako would come on?
Oh yeah, 100%. He gives it all the, I'm not into this whole media thing. And then someone asks him, he's like, yeah, sure, what time? I'm like, mate, we went into it.
Good. We'll pretend that you haven't said that and just see if we can tempt him on. I want to ask you a couple of other questions just about Tonga, first of all. In 20 years' time, when you are a little bit greyer in the beard, do you see yourself living in the UK? Do you see yourself living in Tonga and all the glories that go with that? Are you going to have a pad in both and travel between, given the cash money that you're earning right now? Where are you going to be? Where would you like to drop anchor in 20 years' time?
20 years' time? I'm not sure about 20 years' time, but I think maybe in 10 years' time, I'd love to go to Tonga and live there for 5 or 6 years, maybe 10 years, depending on the time that I get given. Obviously, my wife's family's from Australia, so that'd be easier for her. But at the same time, I think what I want to do is go back home and help give people or players the same opportunities that I had growing up. And also, I'd like my kids to know the culture that I was brought up in. And I want them to have that freedom to, you know, in Tonga, it's still what England was like in the 50s or 60s in terms of kids playing. They don't know what iPads are or can't afford iPads, so all they do is just mix in and just enjoy life. And I want my kids to have that experience that I had, and also I want, like I said, to help out.
I have great respect for that. The other thing I wanted to ask you, so your old man is interim CEO of Tongan Rugby right now. I read something the other day but didn't really catch the gist of it. What is happening with Tongan Rugby at the moment? Where is it on the map and the comeback?
The biggest thing that my dad wants to do is help locals have an opportunity to play for the Tongan team so that they can come and play, say, in an autumn series where it's a shopping window for them, and give them the opportunities that my dad had. My dad had the 99 World Cup when he came over to play in England and Wales. He was picked up by Pontypool, and here we are now 20 years later. And he wants players to have the same opportunities, but at the same time, it's hard because to have that shop window, you need to be successful as an international team. And that's what he's kind of trying to balance out, is firstly giving the opportunities to the local players, which will then help the local competitions thrive. Because when we were growing up, it was massive. And that's why Toby's dad, all these Tongans in the 99, 2000s kind of made it over here, because of how good the level of competition was back then. We're benefiting from it. And that's what my dad wants to try and, I guess, start up again back home in Tonga.
Squabbles at the top table is nothing new. Certainly living here at the moment, it's more evident than ever. But is there progress being made? I mean, do you have a keen interest in Pacific Island rugby and in Tongan rugby in particular? And is progress coming, or is there still too many shackles to really get that momentum into it? I mean, you know, as a neutral, but as a fan of the game, I would love to see all three Ireland sides performing better than they are consistently. Is that coming? I've got to see Vern Cotter's taken over at Fiji, actually, you know, so they're recruiting brilliantly at the top. Yeah, yeah, he's top dog there now, actually. Where are Tonga in the chance to get back and properly land some punches at not literally, but at the top table of, you know, rugby?
I think it'd be unfair for me to say or pretend to know where they are. But one thing I would say is that they're on the cusp of opening up avenues for locals back home, but also having a better program where they can play, say, here in England against France or Ireland. And I think one thing that they probably need to do is focus less on the money they can get or generate in the short term and try and get play as many games against an England, against the Wales, and challenge them like Fiji have done for the last 10 or so years, so that you then warrant having those conversations where you're saying, okay, well, you want us to play against you, you need us to play against you, you need to reimburse us. And I think at this very moment, I might be speaking out of turn, but Tonga only do well when there is something on the line, say a World Cup, because they know that yeah. that's a shot window for them. And they always do well at a World Cup. And we even talked about that as an England team. You know, that the week before we play them, or 2 weeks before, New Zealand put 9 points on them, and then we turn up to play against us and we struggle to get going. And that kind of sums it up from my point of view of an outsider. And I hope they can first concentrate on putting out a good product on the pitch. Not that they've been poor, but they've been quite inconsistent. And then once we can get a consistent base from there, we can start asking things of people that we weren't.
I think they weren't. Al, just on that, well, I've got a slightly different view of that, only because I had a long chat again with Dan Leo. I filmed for his documentary that he's doing. I think you're exactly right that money should never be the motivating factor in doing anything. But I did hear that I think the game's been cancelled. England were due to play Tonga, I think, or we're going to come over. And England were going to take whatever they were going to take, which is right because of all the sponsorship and everything else like that, and all the players' usage of image and all the requirements. But the Tonga guys were not even going to get something like £100 each. And I think for me, things aren't sustainable without funding them. And I think that if the Tonga side comes and plays England, they need to be fairly paid. And it needs to be structured in such a way that actually they can then put that money back into a system so that they get more opportunities to play. I never got to play many of the Pacific Islands. You know, the first time I ever went to Tonga was when you invited me to your wedding thinking I'd never turn up. And I came, you know, 28 hours just to turn up there. And I want to see that part of the world. And I think that if we don't help fund them, we don't do something properly, that they're going to end up disappearing. So I don't think they think they need to play for money, but I think they need to be reimbursed, or the union needs to be reimbursed, or structures need to be put in place by World Rugby to make sure that this money's there and it's used so they can come back again and we can go and see them. And if we wanted to go over and play a game over there, they would have the facilities and the structure. Because how amazing would it be if we flew into Tonga to play an England game at the end of a tour and stuff? I think it'd just be amazing for everybody, and just to give you that exposure, and it would help both ways, you know, put them in a shot window and us in a shot window over there.
Yeah.
No, I think that's one thing I would say is that one thing we could do in return, something New Zealand talk about all the time, is that we play over there, you know, and they've only played one test against, I think it's Samoa, and that was only recent. If we could do that in return rather than, say, what you're saying, reimburse them, that would do more for them in, say, a 1 year where we go there, play Fiji, Tonga, Samoa. Honestly, if England went to Tonga, they would close the whole country down for a whole week. That is not even a lie. We'd probably put on 6 kilos each just because of, you saw what it was like, Hass. They would worship, you know, players when they get off the plane. And that effect that England would have if we went there now would last forever, I think. And that's something that you get by playing well, turning up at Twickenham and doing a good job, and then holding the right to be like, right, it's your turn to come to us. But I think it'd be an amazing tour, especially, say, for example, the Lions tour's on. What's to say that England can't go to Tonga, Samoa and Fiji for 3 weeks?
And so
it's weird we've never did it. It's weird that we absolutely never did
well,
it.
Commercially, the top brass will tell you that it doesn't make sense. And there will be people who have got the answers to this in the corridors of power at World Rugby saying, we're doing what we're doing and we're trying as hard as we can. But the truth is that Pacific Island Rugby is getting left behind on all evidence. And it's a travesty for the game.
Do you think, I was talking to someone the other day actually about this, that obviously a lot of nations have taken Pacific Island players, given them a cap or one, you know, one or two caps and then not used them again. What's your view, you know, because you've got a lot of friends in different teams and you play with a lot of guys. You know, do you think they should reverse that rule?
You know yourself, as like the one cap is years and years of like preparation and getting yourself into that position where someone picks you to play that one cap. Speaking from my perspective, if I had one or two caps and then England said that they weren't going to pick me again, my reaction would be, I'm going to work harder to be picked by England. It wouldn't to be, okay, I'm going to, right, I've got my two caps. My agent can now go and tell people, and this is the side of the conversation people don't hear. My agent can now go and talk to France and say, right, he's got two All Blacks, Australia caps, South African caps. I am now in a bracket where I'm an international. You know, it's easy for people to now talk when they're in France earning good money, offer those two caps. I miss out on a World Cup because you don't want to play me. But the rules say exclusively that you can only play in New Zealand. And that's one thing that I always think about myself, is that if I didn't make it with England after my first cap, I'd just be like, okay, I'm gonna make two. I'm going to make three. I'm not going to jump on a plane and go to Japan or do a Hask and go to Highlanders.
Just a little tickle in the ribs. Just a nick of the kidneys.
Oi, remember I said you're a nice person? You're not.
Redacted. Very good. Billy, it's such an honour to have you on. It's such a pleasure to chat. It really is. We're going to have a little break, though, because we're going to tell you about a few other bits and bobs. In the meantime, though, we will be talking more to Billy about Saracens, a season in the Championship, the Lions. But you are listening and watching The Good, The Bad and The Rugby on 21.6 Sport with me, Alex Payne, alongside James Haskell and the aforementioned legend that is the England number 8, Billy Vunipola. You can join in The Good, The Bad and The Rugby Facebook group. We've got thousands of you in there already. Welcome to each and every one of you. I think Hask, Tins and I may even be dipping our toe in there once in a while. Just type in Good, Bad, Rugby and you can get plenty of stuff to be involved with that. Same deal on Instagram and Twitter. That is at Good, Bad, Rugby. You can join in the conversation wherever you feel comfortable and be nice to each other as well. It's also where you can find Carol Haskin, which is about the most offensive thing my eyeballs have seen in quite some time. Very unsettling indeed.
Oh, yeah. Billy in his single days probably would have tried to knock that in.
Right.
Good. 100%. After a double curry pizza and a litre of Fanta and a couple of Coronas, he'd be going, hello, babe. I'd be like, it's Bill, it's me in a dress. No, come on.
Thank God you found a better woman to look after you. Right, we've had some really sort of deep chats, Bills. Let's keep along the theme. How difficult has it been being a Saracen over the last 6-9 months?
I think when we first had the first round of points deduction, we were all pumped because we were like, okay, this is a cool challenge that we've now got after the World Cup. It's something to really sink our teeth into. And we were all excited about that because we felt like we could get out of it. And then I think Prem Rugby realised that we could get out of it, even with our young team. And so we were ticking along nicely and then they hit us with the second lot. And then after that, it then became about, obviously, the coaches and CEOs and whoever made the decisions about who we could keep and who we couldn't keep. It was never about people wanting to leave explicitly. And that's kind of says a lot about our culture. And we lost a lot of good people, whether it's your Ben Spencers or your Will Skeltons. All these boys, and obviously a few boys have gone out to loan. But
how difficult was that? I mean, particularly you are, and I've said this before, you're an incredibly tight bunch and a bunch of very good people. But when jobs are on the line and people are being told thanks, but we can't keep going, you know, is that unity? Did it remain because of the understanding of the situation, or did you find it actually as a group pretty bloody difficult?
No, it definitely remained, and the reason for it was that we would talk about it openly. And half jokingly, half seriously be like, oh yeah, the club have done me over, you know, one of those along those lines. But it was never something that people would go into their own houses and be like, oh, the club have done me over. They talk to each other about it. You get different people's point of views and then you get to see where they're coming from in terms of why they've had to go and why the club couldn't keep them or why we've come to this decision in terms of players having to leave or go on loan. And that's the best thing about the club is that everyone's really open. Everyone knew what was going on. Coaches know that if they tell one person what's going on, everyone will know by the end of that day. So sometimes they tactically do that. I feel like, but everything that happened, we knew before it came out. So there was never any disappointments. There was never any squabbling or quarrels. And now we're in a position now where we're, I guess you could say, we're building up to this Leinster game, because essentially we're playing against teams that are all vying for the top four. And the one thing that we can truly go after is how good can we be as players in the next few weeks, and not just be like a mannequin, basically, not just turn up just for the sake of it. We want to do really well, and that says a lot about the club, and we want to do really well for each other and people in that room.
It would be very Saracens to win the European Cup. It just would be very sad. The Eagles, which won't mean anything to either of you, are an amazing band, and they were asked, when they broke up, they were asked whether they ever play together, and that the famous line was, they would only play together when hell's frozen over. And then, of course, they got back together and they went on the Hell's Frozen Over tour. And it just is a sort of similar vibe that we know the band is breaking up. There sort of feels like there's one massive hurrah, final hurrah in there. Is that something that, you know, obviously lost at the weekend, but do you feel there's a bit of a bubble in the cauldron?
Oh, definitely. I think we're all very excited. We enjoy it when people say that, like listening to Ben Kaye on the weekend, like we watch all these things and, you know, he says, how long can we keep it up for? I feel like we're going to get way better than what we put out on Saturday. We were disappointed that we lost, even though there was nothing on the line for us. We were disappointed with what we put out there. So we're always trying to get better at the club, and we're also doing a lot of things to try and keep the team close. You know, after what I said earlier about COVID, I probably won't tell you what's going on, but we're trying to do little bits to keep the morale high, and also to incorporate the new lads who've just come in. I guess that's kind of where we specialise, is how do we incorporate different players, different people, and get them involved into the group that we've got.
Surely getting rid of Cruiser would have helped the levels of chat and happiness. Like when you said that Cruiser must have come in and gone, I'm ready to stay, and the lads went, actually, we booked you to Japan. We've all packed up your stuff. It's like, I've got a couple of weeks left. Sorry, Beaker, you're gone. Surely his missing chat must really get morale going, because it's one of his stories, and I'm a bit like, no, can't we be relegated now?
Mate, the funniest thing that happens is when we turn up at the gym, because obviously we're split into different times because of COVID restrictions, and sometimes we'll catch Caruso in there and we literally abuse him for however long he's in the gym for. Everyone just like hammers him the whole time, and then when he walks, everyone starts cheering and like clapping.
Oh, God.
His bank manager will be doing the applause at this point in time, I'd have thought. It might be on a pretty penny. Were you tempted to go? Was your agent out and about?
No, I never even looked at an opportunity to leave. My brother made a smart move. He kind of kept his cards closer to his chest than I did. I just came out and was like, yeah, I'm staying. I'm not going anywhere. My brother was trying to play the old chess game with the poker face. But I think from my point of view, it was never in my head to leave. As soon as they said to us that we were going to get relegated, I think my first reaction was like, okay, I'm going to try and help the team come up at least and play a year or two, and then I'll see where I go after. But I've got a lot of things that I want to do with the club and for the club, and that was kind of my first reaction.
Did you get relegated because they kept putting all the money into Vulpola Enterprises, your property development company? Because I remember you and Marrow, when I read that in the paper, I literally messaged Billy and I was like, how the hell do I invest in Vulpola Enterprises, firstly? I need some of that property scandal. And Marrow, valued at 800 bags. That must mean I was worth 2 million. I called up my agent and went, how have we got away with that? How's that happened? Image rights, I'm at the biggest media hall going. So Mako separated from Vulpola Enterprises, kept his cards close, and he's cashed in, and you've said, well, no, I'm definitely staying.
No, he's on board now. I had to have a few conversations with him over the... via our girlfriends and wives, not directly, but he's back on board.
I see Mark McCall said that you're going to play a bit in the Championship. Billy is not all that keen to train without matches. Billy likes to play. Billy loves the game. And Mako's like that as well. It could be Billy and Mako play a little bit more in the Championship than some of the others, because that's where they like to be, without being overplayed. Are you bang up for a trip to the various extremities of the Championship?
Oh, this is what is getting me excited, and some of the other boys that I'm close with, is going to places like a Doncaster or a Jersey away, playing, obviously putting our best out, and then just making sure that people know that we are still rugby players, not these, you know, not like Hask, you know, we don't all have 12 packs and whatever packs coming out of our backs. We can have good time, and I think that's what we want to show next year, is that we are good people. Referee from last weekend will probably disagree, but we want to go out there. We want to do next year properly and play our best, get some young boys through and make sure that they know how we kind of do things at the club, but also make sure that they know that we work hard and, I guess you could say, play hard.
Genuinely, it's going to be a fabulous story to watch.
The one thing I've always admired about you is you genuinely love rugby. You genuinely love the game. You don't care empty stadiums, shit pitches. You just want to go out there and play, don't you?
Yeah, I think my biggest thing is that I play rugby to play rugby. I don't play rugby to train. I don't train to just train. I love knowing that what I'm doing during the week is going to help me on the weekend. And that kind of what drives me, and which is why probably Smalley said that, is because I told him, if we're just doing fitness instead of playing rugby, I'd rather play with the boys, 100%.
Will it be a bit like your last year at Harrow, where they, you know, Billy went to play and he, I don't know, he was 140 kegs. He'd obviously been doing a lot of crying that term because he'd had a lot of mince pies. And he basically played one game and didn't you kill someone? Like, you scored five tries in the first minute of the half the game and they were like, you're not allowed to play anymore. Someone in the Championship is going to get the shock of their lives when you and Mako, you know, you run straight trucking. Do you reckon you're going to get banned from running over, beating out poor underpaid kids?
No, I think, I think if you're going to play professional rugby, you've got to play against every team that's in the league. So we're just going in with, like, we're just doing our best. And like you said, if that means trucking, we're trucking. If that means playing, we're playing.
Because you know some people will be coming after you. Are you ready for that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. I'd rather that than just like turn up and everyone's like really respectful and really like, oh yeah, oh, it's nice to play against you. I'll be like, mate, are you sure? If I was in their shoes, you know, I'd go after me too.
Because you know the chat of the Championship, because they're a little bit more grassroots, they're a little bit sharper, they're a bit more aggressive. You know, we've had it easy. Like, if you meet some Championship lads, they're going to be quick-witted, they're going to know the way around it, you know, just going, shut up, brother, ain't going to work. You know that, don't you? You have to raise your game.
I'm just going to use, have you seen the Penrith Panthers coach when he went back to play his old team, when he's just like giving them the blow kiss and then pointing at the scoreboard? That one always works if you're winning.
I tell you what, there aren't many cameras at Champo games as well. So there are a lot of dark corners to hide in if you need to. I certainly don't need to encourage you. Just very quickly though, so Lions, because I know Warren Gatland has said he's got no problem with you playing in the Championship. Have you spoken to Warren Gatland of late?
No, I haven't. I think I haven't even talked to Eddie about Lions or playing for England. I think, in all seriousness, you know, to be on the Lions tour, you have to play for England if we're going to play in the Championship.
Have you spoken to Eddie about England?
Yeah, I think his biggest point to us was to be fit and ready to play at that level. Obviously, if needs be, they'll have more access to players that he wants to play for him in terms of an extra fitness program or weights or a diet, which is probably what I'd be on if I do let myself go. But realistically, to be in the shop window for the Lions, you have to play for England in this upcoming autumn series and next year's Six Nations.
Are you tempted to send Warren a little, I don't know, a little business card or a poke on Facebook or something? Because post-2017, I don't need to remind you, you said that the series would have been won by the Lions had Eddie been in charge. Have you ever caught up with him on that? And is I think of all the people in rugby, he's about the king of letting these things slide. I don't imagine that he'll have hung on it very much. But have you ever addressed it with him? Has he ever sent you a note?
No, I haven't. That's not to say I haven't thought about it. Obviously, the one thing I would say is that him and Eddie are quite close from what I understand. So hopefully Eddie can kind of let him know that sometimes I just say silly things and open my mouth and, yeah, hopefully that doesn't come back to bite him on the backside.
I know, obviously, it goes Saris and then England, but can I just ask you about Lions' ambitions? I mean, you were selected... Actually, obviously, you know, you were selected for 2017 and your misfortune was Hask's moneymaker in many ways, but, you know, what would it mean to you to go next summer with the Lions?
I'd love to go. I think that's kind of what's driven this whole new direction that I'm going in. I've got something to go after, and that is obviously England first, but the Lions is such a big deal for myself and for everyone else. But having gone so close last time and for injury to take that away, it's just the way it was. But hopefully I can put myself in a good position to be on this tour, and I'm really excited about the prospect of competing to go on that plane. And I think for myself, one thing that drives me a lot is that my brother and Toby have been on two, And whenever we go out and sit together, they're always like, oh, what about when we're in Noosa in Australia? I'm like, oh, you two give it a rest. What about when we're in Queenstown? I'm like, oh my gosh, these two taking the piss. Oh.
Do you feel, Bill, amazing moments.
Do you feel, Bill, that you're a bit of a crossroads in your career now? Knuckle down, play well, Lions, another opportunity, World Cup, and you become even more of a figurehead, or, you know, you maybe get a few more chances, but the demons take you the other way. Do you feel like you're sitting in that kind of position at the moment?
I think I'm firmly on the road of the former there. This is kind of a similar situation, not the same thing would happen, but similar situation that I found myself after that World Cup in 2015. I know you've talked about it a lot. You've lived off that quite a bit recently from what I've heard.
Oh, wait till the new book comes out. I really will be living off it then. What a flank here. Bookshops now.
From that moment, after I did my knee in the Australia game and realising how far off the pace I was, that kind of drove me on to a kind of different level that I needed. And similar sort of vein to this, you know, I've had a bit of success with Sarries, thought I was the man, did a Grand Slam, thought I was the man again, get to a World Cup, and then to get comprehensively beaten by South Africa was like the best thing I think that could have happened to me, because it's put me in a position where by I'm trying to soak everything up again to climb my way or find my way again to a place where I was really successful. That's not to say I'm unsuccessful or whatever, but the way I see it is that I'm right at the bottom of snakes and ladders and I'm trying to get to the top again. And it's a great challenge for myself and it's a nice direction for me to be on. And like you said, I want to do England. I want to do Lions, potentially another Lions tour after that. But it's kind of in my hands to put that into action through my own actions.
How, I mean, we've spoken last time actually about your faith, but how much has your faith helped you, particularly recently as you get back on? And how much was your faith tested at times? And I think you touched on it last time we spoke actually, but I wondered in the intervening sort of period, whether you've found that faith tested and how reliant you are on it now.
I don't think my faith has ever been tested. I think the one thing that has happened is more me walking away from it and thinking that everything that I've managed or have accomplished in my life, I did it through my own doing. But then I wasn't content because I always thought that there was something else better that I could be doing. For example, you know, I was injured for a long period of time. I come back after one of my injuries. This is not to say that you should believe in God or Jesus, but I come back and we win the Premiership against Exeter in 2018. Still, I'm like, oh, I'm ungrateful. There's millions of people out there who'd love to win a trophy. I go on a tour to South Africa, I injure myself, and instead of just being content and grateful for the position I was in, I come back and I started feeling sorry for myself. You know, I've been injured for 5 months, come back, play against Exeter, win the final, go on this tour, don't do very well, come back, feel sorry for myself, sulk the whole summer, come back, start off, break my arm again. And again, I'm in that rut where I felt like, why am I getting punished? But it wasn't me being punished. It was me being tested to see if my faith was based on trophies that I was winning or on actual, if I believe in Jesus or not. And then after that, you win those two trophies. And I go full circle and go back to where I was before and think that I did it all myself. Obviously, I score that try in Leinster and then I start believing my own hype. We win the double. And after the double, I didn't even feel like we achieved the double. It was just like, oh, thank goodness for that. And it sounds silly, but my faith gives me like a gratitude that I don't have from anything else, whether it's a nice car or, I don't know, a boot deal or a sponsor there, here or there. Like with things like that, there was always more to achieve. Whereas when I really do believe in my faith and Jesus and the gospel, I feel really content and really grateful for whatever situation I'm in.
I'm very glad to hear it. And it's great to hear you've got that kind of, that support for you. I'm going to have to ask you about I can't actually remember the detail of the Flau thing, but it's sort of symptomatic really that you sort of got dragged into, I know you put yourself into it, but then it blew up around you as well. Do you have any regrets about that? Or is it just is what it is as far as you're concerned?
It's not is what it is. I think what Flau did was probably the most challenging thing for himself, and from a man of faith, Like, I could have easily just been like, oh, nah, I'm not going to support this. And I didn't sleep for 2 or 3 days after I saw his post, because something inside me was saying, do you actually believe in Jesus Christ or do you not? That was the challenge that I was battling with. Not what Folau had said, but from reading all the comments, it was something that challenged me to step up to a level that I'd never been before in terms of, am I actually going to put myself in a position where people, are, like Hass said, are going to dislike me and people are going to agree with me, but essentially people are going to ridicule me. I didn't enjoy being ridiculed. I didn't. But at the same time, what I did find comfort in is that I stood up for my faith and that I didn't just fall by the wayside.
And how do you reflect on it now? I mean, yeah, how do you reflect on it now?
In terms of, would I do it again?
Yeah.
I wouldn't go about it the same way. It'd be more of a conversation from my point of view. I would talk to whoever had any questions, or because if it happened again now, they'd say, right, Billy, do you stand in support of it? And I would have to say yes, because I've made my position clear. I think a similar situation happened with the Black Lives Matter movement last week, where we were asked if we wanted to take a knee or not. And from what I saw in terms of that movement was not aligned with what I believe in. You know, they're burning churches and Bibles. I can't support that. Even though I am a person of color, I'm still more a person of, I guess, Jesus. I think, like I said, the way Izzy came out with it, or Folau came out with it, was very abrupt and direct. And sometimes the gospel is direct. But at the same time, I think, like you said, we accept people for who they are and what they want to do with their own lives. It's not me to judge. It's for God. And, you know, it's a long story. But this, at the middle of it all, is that to have forgiveness or to go to heaven or to not go to hell, the center of it all is believing in Jesus Christ. And that's what essentially I wanted to get across.
Do you know, Bills, I had absolutely no intention of going here tonight, but I am so glad we did, because I think fundamentally what it highlights is that social media is just not a playground that allows discussion. And actually, you know, we may agree and we may disagree and we both will have different views and whatever it might be. But that is 5 minutes in the middle ground where three of us are listening to each other and discussing it. And I have a clearer understanding of your viewpoint on it. Hask and I have said on so many occasions, the world now is dominated by those screaming loudest from the right and those screaming loudest from the left. And there just isn't a middle ground of discourse anymore. And actually, I have a greater understanding of your position. So onwards, what's next? What's on the to-do list? You know, where are we? We're August 2020. Christ, it's been a year and a half so far. What are we going to do? What are you going to do between now and New Year?
I'm actually... We're expecting our first little kid in...
You're not!
Shut up!
We're not told you, Hask.
No, because you're a fucking terrible friend!
Seriously, you've not told me that. Why have we been talking about all that rubbish? Why have we not got... Come on, how long have you got?
November the 1st.
Oh my God! You ain't got long left.
I've seen it. I've seen it. I didn't even know it worked. Fair play. Bill, that's unbelievable. Why did you not tell... Wait till I tell Chloe. She'll be over the moon. You can't believe you didn't tell me you're a terrible mate.
Do you know what you're having?
I haven't told many people.
No, we don't. You've just told the world now.
Well, we're pretty far along. Like, I think my biggest worry was I'd be here telling everyone and then obviously something bad happened. So it was... Like, I'm very good at when someone tells me something, I just put it to one side and then forget about it. And also, at the same time, like, I don't know what situation different people are in. I don't want to tell Hask and be like, you know, I'm bragging to Hask or tell someone else, and I don't know.
You're not bragging.
No,
that's you know, you're a wonderful person with a wonderful wife, and I was lucky enough to be there at your wedding, and... You know, Chloe loves you. You know, I told you she was super excited when you discovered coming on. And I think you'll be an unbelievable dad. If you need a godfather, Uncle Hask, I'm fully, fully available. And you know, you said about snakes and ladders. The kid's going to have snakes and ladders. I'm one of the snakes that's going to be on the ladder. Boy, may or may not, may take him up to the top, may take him all the way down to the bottom. But that's the risk you have when you get me involved.
Bill, do you know what you're having? You're having a girl or a boy?
No, we haven't. We're just going to find out, obviously, when she gives birth. I think my biggest thing was Tongan culture. You kind of give the naming rights to your parents. I just wanted to not tell them it was a boy or a girl, because then they'll just come over and be like, oh, how's whatever name they've given it. And also, me and my wife have a conversation about it all the time about whether we're going to give them the naming rights. And yeah, that was kind of the reason why we don't really want to find out. And also, it's a good surprise.
It is a
I'll take the naming
surprise.
Rights.
It makes it easier.
Martin Vinopola. Ferrari, yeah. Mercedes, Ferrari Vinopola. I love that. Boy, minibus Vinopola. There's so many.
No, so many Denver, names. Ice cream vans.
Ice cream.
Have you built the cot? Have you decorated the room? Have you done sort of a little bit of shopping for little bonnets and booties?
No, we haven't. We're going to start next month. Like I said, I didn't want to get too ahead of myself. And
yeah, I got you.
Now we had the 28-week scan, I think it was.
Yeah.
Now we're going to start getting into it. And also, we've been on pay deferrals and, yeah, we've just been scraping by.
My daughter came at 26. Yeah, exactly. I can imagine. My daughter came at 26 weeks, so you are well into overtime. You're doing great at 28. That's going to be amazing. I mean, where are the excitement levels? Or are you someone who's just sort of, you're just keeping it where it needs to keep?
No, I'm pretty pumped. Obviously, I've grew up a lot with a lot of kids in the house all the time, whether they're babies and toddlers, with my little cousins. So I think the one thing I am worried about is my sleep. But
I was going to say that.
I sleep through quite a lot of things. Like, apparently my wife's been getting up for midnight snacks and I haven't even got up. She's been getting up to go to the toilet 6 times a night, and she always asks me, do you get up? Did I wake up? I was like, no. She's like, oh. So I'm hoping that I'll do the morning shifts. Like, I've been getting up at 6:30 to try and prepare myself. Maybe 6:30 is probably a bit too late, but I've been trying to put in little things for me to hopefully be better at when baby does come.
I'm so pleased for you. That is really, really, really good news. And what about on the paddock? Obviously, there's a quarterfinal in the Heineken Champions Cup coming up. There's a lot of rugby to be played between now and then. Do you feel, in many ways, do you feel rested, refreshed?
Oh, I feel awesome. I think what I've been looking forward to most is getting back into the routine of training for a game, not just training for the weekend. Because the more we train, the more time we have off. I think Haskell would know from, you know, Sarri's, we tend to have quite a lot of time off. So, and I enjoy the routine of, you know, going out for breakfast with the lads or whatever it is on our days off. And that routine helps me more than just training and then having the weekend off, because I can balloon 3 or 4 kilos in 2 days. So that gives me time to not put on weight.
Well, we're very much looking forward to seeing you get back and do what you do best. Billy, you're an absolute superstar. It's been such an enjoyable chinwag and wander around the various topics. Just before we go, we've got a very quick test for you. We're borrowing from the French TV show Bouillon de Culture, which is essentially a little pop quiz. We're calling it Shoot from the Lip, and we need to give this a name. I like Shoot from the Lip, but if you want to put something else into the group, tweet us at GoodBadRugby, and the best one will not only win a prize, apparently, but the honour of having named our pop quiz. Are you ready? Favourite word?
Food.
Lad.
Lad. Least favourite word?
Wife. I've said it a million times.
Good luck explaining that away. Greatest moment in the game?
Leading out the team against New Zealand in the semi-final. That was cool.
That was very... What a day. Worst moment in the game?
When we lost to Northampton in 2014. That was our second final in 2 weeks and we lost it.
Ouch. Favourite swear word?
F word, probably. My wife's just come back, so I won't say
good. Yeah, sit up straight, behave. What sound or noise do you love?
We have one at the club that we do a lot, is like, chee! Like, you're trying to big up the boys if they do something well. So you might hear that in the game.
Good. Sound or noise that you hate?
Level 3 of the quiz.
Yes. 100%.
What profession other than your own would you love to attempt?
Baseball.
Really?
Yes.
Pitcher or hitter?
Nah, hitter. Like, when we went to Japan, I was like, this could be... They're basically cricketers, but cooler.
Yeah. Way and in pyjamas.
Yeah.
Hask, your baseball went well, didn't it?
Yeah, brilliantly.
We'll get the video back up of that. If you could do a road trip with 3 players, who'd be in the car?
Barrington, 100% Richard Barrington. I throw Hask in there as well. Man, oh, you two vibe very well, eh?
I'm in Hask's sidecar. I'm like goggles and gloves, but yeah.
Who would be the third one? You need a bit of direction. A I'll put my brother in there because he'll tell us where to go.
That's a lovely.
You'll like to hear that.
He'll love to hear that. Final question: if heaven exists, and by all accounts it does, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Hask by the bar with a cold one.
I'd like to, if I was going there, I'd like to hear, oh, goodness me, you almost didn't make it.
But you have.
How gutted would you be, right? If I was like that, if you came in and I was like this, you'd be so rattled. With my arm around an angel like that. Oi, get a couple of cold ones in, build by the bar. You'd be so rattled. You'd be like, how's he got in here? Because what? And I'd be like, oh, God. Don't worry, son, we're right.
The one thing I would love is that if I do hear that, is I have a full head of hair again, and so do you.
Yes, I would love that. I'd have a ponytail like a top knot. I'd love that.
Such a good note on which to go out. Hask, you're getting very good at the if heaven exists. You're one last week. We need to actually get Hask's in hell made as a hashtag and B into a bad t-shirt. On that note, Bills, we're going to get some t-shirts made. Good, bad, or rugby? Which one would you like?
Good.
Good. All right. We may have to stitch three or four together to get the right size for you, but we'll pop one in the post and send it over. You're a ledge. Has it been all right?
All good. Thanks for having me.
You're a top man. I'm so excited for you over the next few weeks and months. Get into bed and don't get out again until November, because life will never be the same again. But I'm very happy that we've broken the news this evening. Keep doing what you do best. You're a superstar. Thank you so much for coming on. Ladies and gents, what a trooper. That is it for this week's The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Do subscribe via YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Just tap in Good, Bad, Rugby. And we'd love a review as well. You know better than we do that it all helps with this sort of thing. Get involved across our social media pages as well. All sorts of things happening across the channels on a daily basis. Thank you to Billy, the ledge. Well done, the Hask. Always a pleasure. We'll be back next week with a true superstar of the game, a genuine Hall of Famer. Tune in for that next week. Thanks to all of you for now. Love and hugs. Be seeing you soon.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It can't have been easy.